Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, June 11, 2019. A high-profile South Sudanese activist is sentenced to 2 years in prison.
The court deviated from the principles of law. Peter was expressing himself in the first instance because he's being charged for speaking on VOA. And if that's the case, then the right to freedom of expression under the Constitution is on trial here.
And police are cracking down on drivers with tinted glass in the capital.
Been arrested because of the tinted mirrors, which is for the company, not the local one made here. But at the end of the 15 days, if you don't fix the mirrors, you are also to be fined another one.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's High Court in Juba today sentenced a prominent peace activist and economist to 2 years in prison after he was accused of allegedly inciting an uprising while behind bars in the so-called Blue House. South Sudanese businessman Carbino Wall received a combination of 13 years for allegedly leading the uprising. 4 other men received 5 years in prison. Worker Simon Wudu has more for VOA from Juba.
One of the relatives of the convicted felons breaks down in tears as High Court Judge Sumaya Sally Abdallah announces the sentencing of her beloved one. Judge Abdallah says activist BR violated various sections of the South Sudan Penal Code that relates to engaging in a criminal act with others. The judge says Wall violated sections 48, 68, 72 and other parts of the South Sudan National Security Act and a penal code, which among other things states that when a criminal act is committed by more than one person in furtherance of the common intention of all, each person is liable for that act as if it were committed by him or her alone. Lawyers for BR and businessman Carbino Wall vowed to appeal, arguing they have not seen any concrete evidence their clients broke the law. Lawyer Philip Anyang represented BR.
The court deviated from the principles of law. Peter was expressing himself in the first instance because he's being charged for speaking on VOA. And if that's the case, then the right to freedom of expression under the Constitution is on trial here. The right to freedom of expression also is on violation, because if the court forgets that this is a constitutional right under the Constitution, as long as you're not infringing on anybody's right, this is an entitlement that Peter was entitled under the Constitution. But it's being used now against him by the court.
According to Judge Abdallah Beer's interview with the VOA last October during a riot at the National Security Headquarters in Juba, known as the Blue House, caused public disorder. The 34-year-old Beer, who worked as an economist for the World Bank, was detained in July after making comments critical of the government and opposition leaders for failing to end the 5-year conflict. The prosecution dropped an earlier charge of terrorism against Beer. Wall was sentenced to a combined 13 years in prison for various counts, including terrorism, insurgency, and spying. 4 other convicts were sentenced to 5 years in prison for violations of the National Security Act and South Sudan Penal Code. Wall's lead defense lawyer, Ajaka Mayol Bior, says his team will also appeal.
We have everything on our side. There is nothing that has been proven until today. It has never been proven that these people even shot a single bullet. They're actually the victim. They were terrorized, they were shot at, and they were brought before the court only for them not to be protected by the court or the law, but be convicted.
Beer's wife, Nyathon Hotmai, says considering the widespread practice of impunity in South Sudan, she was expecting an even worse sentence for her husband.
I think to me, I wouldn't say it's fair, but it's better than nothing, than when they were inside there. It's very unfortunate somebody like Kirbinot got 10 years and the rest of the guys. These are people with families, and I've seen what their families has been going through, and for them to go through that long period of time is heartbreaking.
All of the men were arrested or detained for different reasons initially. Some were never officially charged with a crime until after the October uprising at Blue House. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still in Juba, drivers in the South Sudanese capital are criticizing the government for cracking down on vehicles with tinted glass. An order was issued by the Director General of Traffic Police requiring owners of vehicles with tinted glass to register them with the police. Viola Elias has more for VOA from Juba.
Drivers of factory tinted glass automobiles must pay 5,000 South Sudanese pounds. Owners who pay someone to tint their car must pay 20,000 South Sudanese pounds and after 15 days must have the tinted glass removed. Speaking last Thursday during the launch of a new visa program that includes new security features, South Sudan Interior Minister Michael Changet said car dealers will no longer be allowed to import cars and trucks with tinted glass.
For those of you in immigration offices, especially those at the checkpoints, tinted vehicles are completely banned. There are people who bring tinted cars from the factories. If we get those people, all the cars will be confiscated from you. So if that's your business to bring tinted vehicles into South Sudan so that criminals will come and buy from you, then we don't want those things here.
On the same day, Major General Con Jonah Kot, the Director General for Traffic, issued the order requiring owners of tinted glasses vehicles to register them with police. Over the past few days, the traffic police have arrested some drivers of tinted vehicles. The drivers were released only after paying a fine. One driver who prefers to be identified only as Peter for the fear of reprisal says the government should not have allowed tinted cars into the country in the first place if they are going to outlaw them.
Been arrested because of the tinted mirrors, which is for the company, not the local one made here. But at the end of the 15 days, if you don't fix the mirrors, you are also to be fined another one. Like if, they said, if it goes for 3 times, the car will be taken from you. And this thing, it's like, it's not good for me because I'm a civilian of this country. And it can't be possible because if the government is supposed to this thing issue and then they are supposed to stop these vehicles right away from Nimule or from any checkpoint.
Charles Amigo, another owner of a tinted car, says he too does not understand why police and government officials are mistreating the South Sudanese people. He says the Interior Minister should first explain to people why it does not want tinted vehicles before enforcing the ban.
I'm not happy. I even feel like selling off the car because it's causing to me a lot of problems. If driving a car in South Sudan is a challenge, it's better somebody foots or use anything like motorbike. So we South Sudanese, we are really, really tortured. We feel like we are being looted by our own leaders. They say this today, tomorrow they change their voice, they bring something overnight and start mistreating people for something that they have not educated people on what they are going to do.
A 32-year-old, Sarah Chol, was arrested by the traffic police while dropping off her daughter to school. She says she does not understand why the government allows her to be arrested for having tinted car windows when her car was imported that way.
Why can't the ministry itself stand on its ground and decide and say these cars should not come and that is a must, as the way they implement the orders of the decree? Otherwise, it will never work because we are just vulnerable. We are buying cars. We are not being restricted when it comes in the country. And then somebody just works like it's an out of bed and you decide what you have to say. You just don't analyze things.
Robert Badri, a legal consultant at the Juba-based Badri and Associate law firm, criticized the manner in which the police are enforcing the ban on the tinted cars. Badri says while the Interior Minister and Traffic Police have the right to issue any order aimed at improving security, the government should have given automobiles owners sufficient time before enforcing the ban on the tinted windows.
The suggestion would be, number one, you can make a total crackdown on tinted vehicles and give a period of a reasonable period, let's say 1 year for all drivers to change their tinted mirrors to the transparent ones. And then simultaneously, you can ban the entry of such vehicle from all entry points to the Republic of South Sudan. So until such time when the period given to the people finished, then you can start asking people on the road, arresting vehicles and giving them fines and all.
This is not the first time the government has tried to enforce a ban on cars with tinted glasses. In October, the police cracked down on a tinted vehicles but gradually relaxed those restrictions. Earlier this year, a similar crackdown was launched, but it only lasted a few days. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
Life has returned to normal in the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. Some traders have opened their stores and roadblocks have been removed from major roads linking the twin cities of Khartoum and Omdurman. Our reporter Mongo Ogali in Khartoum says the pro-democracy protesters are divided on how to proceed with the nationwide strike.
There is a slight improvement on life on the streets of Khartoum. Few shops have opened. Some banks are operating. Public buses are moving in and around Khartoum. And some roadblocks have been removed. But still, there is a heavy deployment of the security forces all over the town.
We are hearing that the pro-democracy activists have released names of people that they want to be in the transitional government. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, they have announced eight names. The eight names actually formed what they call the Leadership Council of the Freedom and Change Coalition, which include three women. But those names have not been revealed. They only announced that they have selected eight members, including three women, who should be called now the Leadership Council of the Coalition. Among these eight people, they have named Abdallah Hamadok. They have nominated him to take the position of the prime minister during the interim government.
What do you know about this Abdallah? Who is he?
What I know a little about Abdallah Hamadok is an international UN staff. He works in a finance department of the African Affairs at the UN United Nations in New York. But he's based in Addis Ababa bureau office.
Are there other names that has leaked out of the eight?
There are no names. The only name leaked out is the name of Abdallah Hamadok so far up to now.
How about the nationwide strike? Is it still going on?
As we speak, there is a long meeting among the Freedom and Change Coalition group. We are hearing reports that they are divided on whether to call off the strike or the civil disobedience, or should it be continued for the coming days. So there are groups saying strike should be called off so people can continue their normal life. But others, like the Sudanese Professional Association, they are saying no, they will continue with the strike and civil disobedience till the demands are met. So as we speak, they are still for the long meeting, and maybe the outcome of the meeting is yet to be announced. This is the development among the Freedom and Change Coalition.
And what about the Transitional Military Council? Have they made any statement on these nominations from the coalition of the activists?
They have not yet made any public statement, but they have not been in a direct contact with the coalition. The military junta announced preliminary report on the investigation on the protesters' crackdown on the incident. They actually announced that they have managed to identify suspects who believe to have committed crimes against civilians on the June 3rd incident. So the head of the security and defense, Jamal Omar, could not give the exact number of the suspects that they have apprehended. However, He says the suspect would be tried within the next 72 hours, that is 3 days to come. So this is the latest development that was announced last evening. And we are also hearing reports that there is a possibility that they are going to announce the steering government in the coming days, possibly this within this week.
That's reporter Mungu Ugali speaking with me from Khartoum this past hour. Thibault Nagy, the U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, plans to meet military junta and protest leaders in Khartoum this week. The State Department says he will call for a cessation of attacks against civilians and urge parties to work towards resuming talks. Marina Ottawa is a senior scholar at the Woodrow Wilson Institute. She says other countries in the region support the military council.
They are afraid that any movement towards democracy in any Arab country will incite people inside their own citizens have no intention of allowing more democratic participation.
Why Egypt, while presiding over the African Union, did not mediate between the military council in Sudan and the protesters instead of Ethiopian Prime Minister?
Well, because I don't think mediating with protesters is part of what the Egyptian president does at this point. He, at home, he replies to protest by repression and not by dialogue. So it's not surprising that he should not be trying to mediate in another conflict.
So if the U.S. is calling repeatedly for a transition to a civilian rule in Sudan, how do you explain that three U.S. major allies are acting against what the United States wants?
Well, because, first of all, the United States is not really committed to Sudan. This is not an issue to which the United States gives great importance. Africa comes very low in the list of priorities. Democracy promotion comes very low in the list of priorities for the Trump administration, so that the support for a civilian government, it's more it's rhetoric. It's the kind of the boilerplate response that the United States always gives. So there is really no penalty to allies of the United States to make statements that go against the policy of the United States in this case.
But does the United States have a solid strategy on Sudan beyond just condemning the military crackdown against protesters?
No, I think it has absolutely no strategy. And I don't think it's even trying to develop a strategy. As I said before, keep in mind that African countries have a very low priority for the Trump administration. So I think the idea that the United States is going to do something to support the protesters in the Sudan, it's preposterous. De facto, there has been no support given to the protest. I mean, the United States made a lot of statements, but in practice, they have abandoned the protesters to their own fate, so that there is no reason to expect that the United States intends to do anything in the Sudan.
That was Marina Ottawa with the Woodrow Wilson Institute in Washington speaking to VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Ashanawi. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, does the ban on plastic bags in Juba help or hurt traders? Stay tuned for more on this story coming up right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what's the best part about being an adult?
I can do each and everything I like. I can plan for myself. I can get what I want. Basically, I do what I want at the moment. Yeah, I'm very independent.
Well, having children, the goal of life is to have someone who will be carrying me on as someone who can't die, actually.
One thing is I can make my own decisions. I don't have to be answerable to anyone. I'm only answerable to myself. and I'm responsible for myself.
Independent decision making, and also having been a head of family, also having knowledge and skill of trying to mentor or train or try to coach others.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America, and it's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we are talking about a ban on the use of plastic bags in Juba. Juba City Council officials have imposed a ban on the sale of polythene bags. The Ministry of Environment and the Juba City Council ordered traders to only use biodegradable bags when packing food for customers. Some traders and customers prefer plastic bags because they claim they are stronger than biodegradable bags. Winnie Chirino has more for VOA from Juba.
Juba Deputy Mayor Thick Mayadit, who is responsible for the city's physical infrastructure, says Juba City Council officials are trying to enforce the ban on polythene bags, but it's not easy. He says some government officials are reluctant to cooperate on the ban. Mayadit says some council members, police and national security staff take bribes from traders who smuggle polythene bags into the country.
Some of our security agents, which are supposed to help us, are the ones which are passing this one by their own, using their own technique. They talk to the people that this thing, yes, the government does not want it, but if you give us money, we can pass it to you where you wanted it.
Mayadit accuses some council officials of looking the other way or allowing authorities to arrest traders using plastic bags or importers, but he says they never appear in court. Mayadit says the council will create more committees whose members will collect and ban the plastic bags. He says any trader selling plastic bags will be fined.
I believe that when you punish anybody with the fine which you have given, that person will not repeat the mistake again. So there are fines. That if we caught you that you have those things in your store or in your shop, you are going to be fined with 500 South Sudanese, half a million South Sudanese pounds.
Daniel Justin, spokesperson for the South Sudan National Police Service, denies that any security or police officers are taking bribes to allow traders to import polythene bags. He insists police confiscated several cartons of polythene bags when the Juba City Council first issued the ban in 2017, but admits some traders in Juba still sell or use polythene bags.
We are arresting, we are doing our job, but still, you see, smuggling is not easy. You see, they hide, they go through routes where there are no security organs, no police, no what. They know how to smuggle it in. That is what happening. But our CID and all these people are working to fight this. And even we are there in the markets and all these places to make sure that these plastic bags are banned. But because it has now become common, we need another operation to be carried out jointly with the city council.
Butcherman Joseph Ladu, who works in Juba's customs market, says he lost nearly all his customers when the government banned polythene bags, saying many of them complained about the flimsiness of biodegradable bags. Speaking in Arabic, Ladu says the butchers continue to use polythene bags because they do not want to lose their customers.
Everyone would complain that they don't want the biodegradable bags. Those who come with buckets and baskets, they say their meat should be put in the buckets, because when they take 5 kilograms of meat, the bag will just tear and get wet. The bag also has small cloth particles that remain on the meat. That's why customers don't like it. But even though they ban, we use it secretly.
Babirio Cheng, another trader at the customs market, says she is disappointed with the alternative biodegradable bags the government prefers. She urges the government to replace polythene and biodegradable bags with stronger, waterproof bags.
This Cavera is not carrying heavy things. It's very bad. If you put meat, fish, if you go to the tax, you carry these things, it is not good. It spoiled my watch, Gomez. Eh? This Cavera, it needs the government to change this Cavera. Maybe to bring another type. But this cavera is very, very, very bad.
Mayadit says the Juba City Council is considering introducing an alternative polythene bag that is stronger but environmental friendly. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
From Juba, we take you to Geneva, where a vigorous debate is going on at the International Labour Conference about ways to tackle the profound transformational changes taking place in labour markets around the world. Dozens of heads of states are among those weighing on the issues to do with job markets. Lesha Schlein reports for VOA from the International Labour Organization Conference in Geneva.
As co-chair of the Global Commission on the Future of Work, South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa has been looking into the problem for the past 18 months. The Commission's landmark report, which was released in January, is being debated and considered for adoption by the ILO conference. Ramaphosa says the threats to work posed by technological advances, the growth of artificial intelligence, automation, and robotics require a human-centered response. That, he says, involves investment in decent and sustainable work.
As countries of Africa, we are particularly determined to ensure that this investment focuses on the creation of economic opportunities for young people. Many of the young people on our continent are unemployed and lack the critical skills demanded by the workplace of both the present and the future.
The Commission is proposing a universal labor guarantee that includes the right to lifelong learning and skills training. Prime Minister of the Russian Federation, Dmitry Medvedev, is in general agreement with the Commission's recommendations, but he warns of other threats to the future of work and to global economic stability. He speaks through an interpreter.
We live in a globalized world, and regulation of labor relations needs some common equal principles. And illegitimate sanctions, protectionism, trade wars, and other artificial barriers negatively affect inter alia the labor market and economy of countries in general.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel praises the International Labour Organization for the work it has done over the past 100 years, trying to make the world of labour a fairer place. But she adds more needs to be done to create decent working conditions for all. She speaks through an interpreter.
In this closely integrated, interconnected world, we have to make more of an effort to really turn economic growth into social progress, in which each and everyone participates. There seems to be almost a reverse trend. Globalization has created a lot of very prosperous people, a lot of very wealthy people, but social injustices and discrepancies seem to grow in equal measure.
Merkel says many pathways lead to the goal of decent work conditions for a good life, but far too many people still are excluded from them. She says there remains a lot of work for the ILO to do in the 100 years ahead. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That's our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Mamoria by JJD Muzika.
Grand Maître Joseph Lago, Aini Yali Kwes Minwasaka, Asan Bizibu Marat Kolera, Nabimutu. Sukran Mama Diki, Asan Tarabana Kwes, Wasaka Makwes, Bizibu Duban Ketif. Kumbe ibe raba ya bagwes
We've been listening to JJD Muzika with the song Wasaka. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could be here. We hope you can join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Sukran mama Kamala mama Diki asanita kumraban na kwes minwa sakra. Hello,
hello.
Dala,
aha.
Itawen.